views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show, talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome. Welcome to our fabulous, fabulous positive news segment. And one of the things we want to say to all of you, I just love how we're bringing information to the forefront that you would not otherwise be getting. Dr. Scott Adzik is joining me here today, Surgeon-in-Chief at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. And today what we're talking about is fetal surgery. Can it save and improve the lives of thousands of children, not just in the United States, but worldwide, thousands of children, maybe even tens of thousands of children. And why is it that we're talking about this? We're going to find out what's happening in terms of children being born in ways that carry forward things such as birth defects that they didn't even think were possible or predictable. But today, it's not about that. It's about solution. Dr. Adzik, thank you for joining us here today. Let's talk about this because I really do think that, you know, as we look at birth defects and we look at the rise in the number of American babies born with a birth defect, it's staggering, isn't it?
Well, the math is pretty impressive, actually. This is Birth Defects Awareness Month, as you know.
Yeah.
And one in every 33 babies is born with a birth defect, which is amazing. So they're amazingly common. Birth defects are costly. Literally billions of dollars are required for medical treatment. Birth defects are merciless. No parent is immune. They're mysterious. Most causes of birth defects are unknown. They're overlooked, in my view. Research is underfunded. And most importantly, birth defects are deadly. They are the leading cause of infant mortality. So in the U.S. each year, nearly 150,000 babies are born with birth defects. And many have conditions so rare, most parents and even some clinicians have never heard of them. So that's one of the reasons why we're speaking together today.
Well, you know, part of the reason, too, is, you know, bringing to the forefront a new level of awareness for everyone. And I want to be able to talk about that with people. I think that what we're looking at now are not just the numbers and the math, but the different types. And I don't know that we've really talked about that quite enough. Let's talk about the, you know, sort of the variation now in birth defects. I mean, it's not just that it's a handful. Give us a sense of what that's about and what is it that we're doing in research to really get on the pulse of this.
Well, most birth defects, the anatomic birth defects, are diagnosed in the 18 to 20-week routine maternal ultrasound. And then the mother, the parents can get expertise from groups like ours about what to do, what are the baby's chances, what are the options. When you think about our referral base since 1995 when our program was founded, we've had 23,000 referrals from all 50 states and from more than 70 countries. But when you think about it, only about 10% of those patients, those mothers and babies, require an operation before birth. So in most circumstances, and this is certainly true for almost all cases of congenital heart disease, the baby should be born in a center like ours, the Center for Fetal Diagnosis and Treatment, in our special delivery unit, which at the Children's Hospital is a unit for mothers carrying babies with birth defects that need care either before birth, during birth, or immediately after birth. And that way you get around having the baby born elsewhere and then shipped into the Children's Hospital by ambulance, helicopter, or airplane. So it's maternal transport, plus the mother, the family, can be with the baby, shortly or immediately after birth. I don't think the incidence of birth defects is increasing, with the exception of a birth defect called gastroschisis. Gastroschisis is where there's a hole in the abdominal wall of the baby right next to the umbilical cord, and all the intestines spill out. And for some reason, probably environmental, the incidence of gastroschisis is increasing. This is one of the many birth defects that's not corrected before birth. There's no big advantage to that. It's fixed after birth, and we'll see about 60 of these cases a year here at CHOP.
I want to talk to you a little bit about the solution. And what I mean by that is, to look at the advancements in fetal surgeries. For the most part, I don't think our audience is quite aware of what that is and what it does. Please go ahead and give us an update.
Okay, so fetal surgery is now done. We do it on a routine basis here, about 200 cases a year here. And we've done about a quarter of the fetal surgeries done worldwide. It's only done for birth defects that cause progressive organ damage before birth, such that when the baby is born, we're too late, and the baby will either pass away or have devastating consequences from the birth defect. So let me give you two examples, but there are many more. Mm-hmm. One is spina bifida. So spina bifida occurs when the tissues surrounding the spinal cord don't form normally, and before birth, various lengths of spinal cord are exposed to the amniotic fluid environment, which is mostly fetal urine. And as we've learned, this is toxic to those developing nerves, particularly during the last trimester, the third trimester. And the toxicity of the amniotic fluid destroys those nerves, so those children are paralyzed up to the level of the anatomic defect. The higher it goes in the spine, the more nerves are affected, and these are children who often require wheelchairs when they're treated after birth. Also, they develop hydrocephalus, or fluid on the brain, and often require a shunt tube after birth if they're not treated before birth. We and others have shown that if you treat this before birth by doing an operation and closing the tissues around the spinal cord, you can ameliorate that damage and prevent progressive damage, such that there's a much higher likelihood that the child will eventually be able to walk, a much lower likelihood that the child will require a shunt tube to drain fluid from the brain. So that's one example. Another example where minimally invasive or fetoscopic surgery is done is for a condition known as twin-twin transfusion syndrome, or TTTS for short. The setup here is that there are identical twins in the uterus, each with their own amniotic sac. But they, as opposed to each twin having their own placental circuit, they share a placenta. And there are abnormal blood vessels going from one side of the placenta to the other, such that one identical twin gets too much blood and goes into heart failure and develops an excess amount of amniotic fluid, and the other twin doesn't get enough blood, develops kidney failure, doesn't produce fetal urine, and has no amniotic fluid around it, and is shrink-wrapped in the membranes. These twins will go on to die unless you do fetoscopic laser therapy, which involves putting a 2-millimeter in diameter scope into the uterus across the maternal abdominal wall, visualize the placenta, and use a laser fiber to photocoagulate or occlude those abnormal blood vessels with a greater than 90% success rate. So those are just two examples of many.
No. You know, as you look at your journey along the way and what you've seen, especially in your passion, your purpose, your dedication, you have been in the forefront of looking at groundbreaking treatments, groundbreaking. I want to ask you this question. Here we are today. What's on the horizon? What are we looking at to really pinpoint either preventative or post? What's on the horizon in terms of innovation?
Well, one that we're spreading this technology by training people and teams to do this throughout North America, and we've trained teams in Europe, in Zurich, Switzerland, and Leuven, Belgium, in London, England, in Poland, and also in the Far East. So it's important for this to spread in a proper way because it requires a multidisciplinary team and great expertise. But in that way, you can magnify the effect to treat more and more patients. In the future, the way we see it, there are three developments that should be discussed. One is cellular therapy, the other is gene therapy, and the third is the development of the artificial womb. For cellular therapy, my colleague Dr. Alan Flake has been working for 3 decades to develop biological means to transfuse adult blood cell-forming stem cells to the pre-immune fetus at 12 to 14 weeks gestation with, say, a cellular deficiency disease like sickle cell anemia, and then have those transplanted cells engraft and take over the missing function. And he's poised to begin to apply this clinically now after 30 years. So it'd be wonderful to have that as a cure for prenatally diagnosed sickle cell anemia, for one example. Secondly, another one of my colleagues, Dr. William Peranto, is working on in utero gene editing. That's been in the news a lot recently. But he's been working in animal models to eventually, hopefully, safely and ethically treat fetuses with, say, cystic fibrosis, diseases of the lung, with gene editing techniques to cure the disease. But that's going to be at least 10 years away. We're at the same stage now for that as we were for the correction of anatomic defects 30 years ago. The third development that's come from our group is, again, Dr. Flake and Dr. Marcus Davey and Dr. Emily Partridge, who have developed a bypass circuit for the artificial womb, which has been shown to be efficacious in fetal sheep. And those lambs can be supported in this artificial womb within a biobag on an oxygenator circuit for 4 to 5 weeks. So how would that be applied clinically? Well, babies who are born too soon, at 23, 24, 25 weeks gestation, have a very high mortality rate, and if they survive, a very high morbidity or complication rate. But the application of this technology, if you could serve this as a bridge to give them 4, 5, 6 more weeks, the outcomes are dramatically better if they can grow and develop normally on that artificial womb. So that'll have clinical application, I believe, within a couple years.
Wow. I mean, there is so much going on. I thank you so much for sharing this. One of the things that I love for our listeners to get is more information. And I think that's one of the best things we can do. Can you give us a sense of how folks can find out more about this?
Well, I think our website's good. It's fetal surgery, one word, .chop, C-H-O-P, stands for Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, .edu. So fetal surgery, one word, .chop, C-H-O-P, .edu.
Awesome.
That's the best source.
Thank you. One last question. I'd love to know your personal message. What would you like to leave us with, Dr. Adzik? What would you like to leave us with today?
Well, that there's hope for previously unsolved problems. You know, we have a fetal family reunion each year in June where patients who we've treated come back with their families. Last year we had over 2,000 people there, and that's just a fraction of the ones we've treated. And it's truly inspiring to see so many children who as babies likely could have died now running around and growing up healthy and strong. I mean, what could be better than that?
I know. Actually, nothing really. Thank you so much for everything you do. Thank you for coming out here. Thank you for continuing the mission and bringing this forward in a not just a thought-provoking way, but also in a results-oriented way. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break, everyone. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Ignite your inner magic on Grow Your Soul Radio with Jane Matanga. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio as host Jane Matanga explores how to overcome your fears to help you gain the inspiration you need to awaken your path to joy. Learn the way to life mastery and the enlightened path with Grow Your Soul Radio. For more information on Jane Matanga and her work, visit enlightened-path.com.
Hey, everybody. Super, super welcome. Welcome to our good news segment. Today, Terry Redican is joining us here today, AP Vice President, the College Board. And so what is this show about? Well, here's what it is. Parents, grandparents, all of you involved in your children's education, it's time to listen up, because it is time for high school students to sign up for next year's classes. So many choices and so little time. Today, Terry is going to take us on a journey of what this means, what it means to prepare for college-level AP courses. It's great to have you here, Terry. Thanks for joining me here today.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
You know, let's talk about this for a minute and talk about what preparation looks like and what it means. And, you know, for many people and also many parents, this probably is a new venue for them. So they're not even sure what we mean when we say college boards. And then when we talk about challenging courses and earning credit in high school, folks are like, what? What? So let's do a quick review in education. For many people, this is new. For other people, it's not. Give us a sneak peek on what you've created, why this is important, and why kids today more than ever are engaging in their own success.
I love it. That's a great introduction. Well, for those that aren't familiar, AP courses, stands for Advanced Placement Courses, those are college-level courses in high school. Students can take these college-level courses in high school, and there are a range of benefits that they can get from challenging themselves with that kind of approach. Students can earn credit, college credit, that saves them time and money once they get to college. College admissions officers say they look for students who challenge themselves with college-level work in high school by taking AP. And students who participate in AP, they're really preparing themselves for college because they're able to develop skills that can help them be successful, skills like critical thinking, reasoning, communication, skills that are woven into the curriculums of an AP course and help you in college and beyond.
Okay, so one of the things I love is your role here is on an annual basis, you're managing the Advanced Placement Program. So you get to see things in cycles, like over and over and over again. So I want to ask you this question, because I know you've seen this, and I don't think we talk about it. What are the trends you're seeing? What kinds of things are students getting involved in? I know from our perspective, we have promoted the idea that high school students get involved in paying it back, whether that be engaging in nonprofit. As a matter of fact, some of them have started their own nonprofits. But is that the kind of thing that will help them or not?
Absolutely. I mean, it's not just about the academic challenge of AP. We've got courses that have been around for some. We have 38 courses in total, and 3 million students took them last year. And I love that you mentioned that you know, I'm part of this annual cycle. I love the annual cycle to see a new crop of students challenge themselves each year and see different trends that emerge. We've got new courses that are interesting to talk about. But one of the things that we started a number of years ago was AP with We. This is service learning. And so a number of our AP courses have service learning components that the local high school teacher can take a service learning approach as part of their course. And whether it's AP computer science or AP environmental science, or it's actually being rolled out to every course because it was so successful. And in addition to the academic rigor that comes with AP, there's a service learning component that goes with it. And it sounds like you're familiar and appreciate some of the benefits that go with that. And we see all kinds of benefits for students who challenge themselves with AP, go on to college. They're able to graduate on time, but they also, they do get involved in so many worthwhile
things.
Because they've got additional flexibility in their schedule because they took AP.
So I want to ask you about this, because one of the things that I think is a mystery for so many people are, I see this as an opportunity for high school students to engage, perhaps even in something they really love, right? And how do you decide? I mean, let's talk about what some of the AP courses are. And I can imagine myself being a student and thinking, okay, wait a minute, there's a way for me to get college credit now. I don't really understand exactly where I'm going, but there are some things I want to do. Where do they find like information about this? Well, how can we get them engaged to start to take responsibility and look at what their options are? See, I believe in options and possibilities, and I think you all do too.
Absolutely. Opportunities for all students. And we're proud and excited that there are so many different AP courses available. And I've got some good news on the question that you've asked.
Yeah.
We've got an online tool that helps students with the process of figuring out what AP course or courses might be right for them. Millions of students took the PSAT and MSQT last fall. And when they go to their online score report, they can see how they did on the various sections. But there's a part of that online score report called AP Potential. And that shows which courses are available, which AP courses are available at that student's high school, and which of those courses the individual student has a particularly strong potential of being successful in based on the strengths, the specific strengths that they demonstrated on the PSAT they took last fall. Mm-hmm. So that's one good way that students can figure out where to go with AP options. Where are they strong? You know, let's build on your strengths. Of course, as you mentioned, students should also pursue where they have interest, whether it's a potential college major, whether it's a career interest. So balancing those things, you know, we would encourage students to talk with their high school counselor, teachers, parents, talking with folks who care about them and using that online resource. Those are some good ways to help students find a fit for them.
You know, the other thing I want to talk about, too, is that how the program also helps students, you know, increase their GPAs, increase their, you know, how successful they are after high school graduation. And what I mean by that is, you know, sometimes, you know, setting a baseline and getting engaged before you take the big leap into college, it's almost like having a preview. So two things I love about this is, one, it takes the scary out of college. Now, I don't know, maybe some kids aren't afraid when their first day of college and overwhelmed, but this also sets the groundwork for preparation, expectation, anticipation. What is some of the information on this? Does this help?
Oh, very much. That's a really great question. I mean, I can speak to it not only in my official role with the AP program and what we see in the data that we have, but also at home. I've got five children. I've got two daughters in high school, and my daughter took her first AP course, and she was not sure. She was ready to handle it, but you know, she's always worked hard in school, and she had some pretty good grades, and she went for it, and she was struggling for a few months. But you know, it as you say, it took the scary out. Once she got to this point in the school year, she had really figured out that she's got to apply herself. You know, for a college level course in high school, there is more work for that than your typical high school course, and it's really important for students to find the right amount for them. But one of the things I love, in addition to getting exposure to college level content and skills, is the confidence that it can give a student if they kind of, you know, take a few lumps out of the gate when they go into that AP course because it's so much work. But you know, there's plenty of time to recover from maybe a few early challenges, mm-hmm. and I just find it builds confidence in students, and I can't say enough of how important that is. If they get students ready and confident, they can take on the challenges of college.
I want to ask you this other question. You know, one of the logical questions I think to ask is, well, if a student engages in this and gets college credit, does that shorten their tenure in college? And you know, the reason I'm asking that is I went back to school after a business career. I'm one of those late back to school advanced learning people. And you know, the thing I loved about it was that there were some things that I had done to get credit, so they applied towards my degree, and I saved a ton of money. Is this the case here?
Oh, very much so. I mean, nearly all U.S. colleges and universities grant credit and placement for a qualifying AP exam score, which is a 3, 4, or 5. Mm-hmm. And what that does is it gives students tremendous flexibility. You know, you took advantage of it in a great way that a lot of students do, in terms of, you know, reducing the amount of time that you had to spend to get that additional credential. And we find that students use them in all kinds of ways. I mean, AP students are more likely to graduate college in 4 years. That alone is a great benefit. And sometimes it's because they have the credits, and it gives them the flexibility to explore some other fields of study in college, maybe get an extra minor, and they might choose to stay 4 years, but they have much more flexibility with what they can study. Some students earn enough credit where they can end college earlier. And really, it just depends on what's right for you, the student. But the flexibility it gives and the a student in terms of how they want to maximize their education for them is one of the great benefits of AP.
Okay, sneak peek. You want to share maybe some of the new innovative courses that are available? What do you've got? What do you have on the calendar that's fresh and new for people to at least learn about?
I'm really excited to talk about some new resources that we have coming. While we have online resources today, students are registering for courses today that they'll start to take this coming August, you know, the next school year. And we have a whole new crop of very interactive resources launching online for teachers and students at no additional cost. Teachers will have access to an online database of 15,000 AP exam questions that they can use for in-class activities and out-of-class practice throughout the entire school year. And students, they can get personalized progress checks based on how their learning is advancing, where they get feedback on the answers they give, and they can know where to improve. So they're maximizing their learning by the end of the year. And again, these new resources launch this coming August 2019, and they're free.
Yeah, we're not talking a handful of students either. We're talking like almost 3 million students take the advanced placement exams, right? And we're talking like 38 subjects, right? And so, you know, here we are with a range of opportunities for parents and students. I want to ask you this kind of last question about the parents. You know, students may be gung-ho, parents may not quite understand what this is all about. What's a message for the parents here?
Yeah, so that's a great question, because parents are such an important part of the academic process for so many students. With the AP program, when you take college courses in high school, there's probably a right amount for your students, and it's a great opportunity to spark some interest. We've got new courses and computer science principle. We've got some skills-based courses where students can pick the topic of their choice in AP Capstone Seminar and AP Capstone Research. So parents, if you see a course that your student's signing up for but that you're not familiar with, if you're familiar with the AP program, you know, maybe encourage them to give that a go. And the other thing is we want students to take the right amount of AP for them. When you say students are gung-ho, That's great to hear that they might be encouraged. But, you know, the majority of students take one or two AP courses, and that is a great benefit. Some students can take more, and you really should do what's right for you as a student based on how that fits into your whole growth process as a high school student.
Well, one of the things I really commend you on is the AP Computer Science Principles course, you know, because what we're dealing with now here is generation after generation. And we can't say enough about, no matter what you decide you're going to major at when you go to school, computer science and the principles of computer science, it is a must for everyone. Regardless of how old you are, what kind of student you are, when you're going back into the education space, this is really important. How successful is that course? And I think you sponsored that, right?
Oh, gosh, that's one of the, it's a really exciting development. The last few years we did, we built that course with support from the National Science Foundation and so many teachers and college faculty out there. It introduces students to the foundational concepts of computer science. It includes coding, but it's not just coding, and students get to do hands-on projects that really expose them to the wide range of careers that are possible, whether it's app development, engineering, robotics, 3D animation. You know, as you said, there's so many opportunities in computer science, and we're thrilled to provide sort of an on-ramp at the college level with this new course.
I love it. And, you know, as a matter of fact, it is the kind of course that, you know, when I looked at the wide range of what you're doing, it's a kind of course that I think most businesses should look at for some of their folks. You know, look, Terry, I want to thank you for today. You've been very generous with your time. Please give out the website for more information. And literally, one last question. What's your personal message?
Yeah, so my personal message is to really use the time in high school to challenge yourself with something you're interested in, with something you might be successful in, and figure out by trying out an AP course, you know, where do you want to go with your education? Mm. You might have found exactly what it is, but if you don't, that's valuable too. give yourself the opportunity, every opportunity you can, to succeed in high school. And AP could be an important part of that. To learn more about it, go to our website, go to exploreap.org, and learn all about AP, and if it's right for you, do your best.
Yeah, that's what I love about it. Can't say that, folks, you're listening, parents, grandparents, can't say. There are a lot of possibilities and opportunities here, thanks to Terry and his team. Terry, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, everybody, we're going to take a short break. Yep, lots that we just talked about. We're going to make sure we replay this. This is super important. We'll be right back.